Hi, welcome to Django Chats, fortnightly podcast on the Django web framework. I'm Carlton Gibson, joined as ever by Will Vincent. Hello, Will.
Hi, Carlton.
Hello. And today we've got Dawn Wages with us. Hello, Dawn. Thank you for coming on the show.
Hi. I just wanted to say, am I the first person to make the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air reference here?
Oh, yeah, on this show. I mean, I haven't heard that since
primary
school.
Okay, good. But, yeah. I mean, I'm sitting in Philadelphia talking to Will and Carlton. I had to make it.
West Philadelphia,
I never thought about that. Well, welcome. We're very excited to talk to you about a number of things. Wagtail, React, Django, Django Girls, your own journey. So maybe we can start with just briefly about yourself and how you got into programming and Django in particular.
Yeah, sure. Okay. So I started out with a business degree and thought I was going to go into business analytics after I graduated from North Carolina. After I graduated, I came up to Philly and got involved with the Philly Python Users Group. This is also after a failed attempt at going into finance. Really glad I didn't make that work. So the Philly Python Users Group was great. Also happened to be that year DjangoCon was in Philadelphia. And I attended Django Girls, but not much else of the conference, but just really got like a great energy. I was hanging out in Wharton, and Tim Allen was just one of the main people leading the group, and is also is a part of the entertainment committee, or so he's great. He's just a let's go find some good food. So it was really, really nice, welcoming community, and I just kept going back, and so I've been to 16, 17, 18, 19, and 20. And so then since then, I've been really getting, I consider myself community taught. And so I can speak more about my consulting journey as well. But it took me a couple of years to get started and get paid to be a Django developer. And then took another year or so still before I could do it full time.
Okay, but it's, so you're kind of self-taught as a programmer, right?
Yeah.
So you come from a business background, and
I've never. I do not have a computer science degree, and I did a boot camp in JavaScript that I have complicated feelings about boot camps myself, but I don't really talk about it much because I have complicated feelings about them myself. I'm self-taught.
Yeah, cool. I mean, it's something we always like to pick up because some people go through the CS route, and then I didn't. I did philosophy, and then it's like, right, I'm going to learn programming. And it's like, I'm just working out the basics, and people are like, you've got to learn algorithms.
Yes, exactly. Yes. And I don't know if this will be full circle, but I also have, I've gotten to the place where I started learning, and I was very pragmatic about the things that I would learn. I love Django because the documentation's great. Getting started is really easy. I would like to say that becoming an intermediate Django knot is a little difficult, and so more resources are coming out literally every day. So it's really, really awesome to see it's such a buzzing community. So it's just I wanted to be able to make money very quickly. I did not come with a safety net. I do not have a nest egg or a family with a with a basement for me to just code in passionately. So that was really helpful, and I was able to feel like really impactful and build something really quick. And that's also something designed by the Django Girls tutorial. So I kind of modeled that, and then I've gotten circle, went back around. I'm part of Trey Gunner's. Python Bytes.
Morsels.
Morsels, I think, right? Morsels, yes. Python Morsels, want to plug it right, because it is very, very good. I really like their emails. And I've been doing some more Python things and some JavaScript tricks and things like that, trying to get, into the deep end. It's fun.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I think one of the things I think about is that Django is... You need a little bit of Python, but I find myself doing very little actual Python when I'm doing Django. So having something like Trey's resource or others, it's a sort of a small amount of Python that I actually use. So I often find resources to sharpen up my Python because I feel like I don't use raw Python that much, actually, unless I'm dealing with big data sets or doing something separate
100%.
From Django itself.
100%. I mean, I've heard from other people, and I agree, as I'm learning what Pythonic means, that Django is written incredibly Pythonically. And I really appreciate that. And, you know, I'd love to entertain conversations about it too. Yeah, when I first was applying, I would say, yeah, well, I don't know if I'm a Python dev. I am a Django dev. And I've gotten a little bit more confident in that, too. Just also with the ability to learn and just to navigate those kind of conversations, knowing what I don't know and being comfortable saying that I don't know something truly makes people more confident in when I can say I do know something. A little bit of an evolution, trying to grow.
For me, that's the journey, though, right? Like, you know... Why program? Well, because every day there's like a new experience, a new, it's, you know, the exact opposite of standing on a production line.
Yeah. I mean, that's the fun part. Making things, building things, watching it work. I had a friend who wants to go into algorithms. I'm like, that doesn't sound like fun. Are you going to do DataViz too? No. I'm like, oh, that doesn't sound fun. So I agree. That definitely scratches the itch for me.
Can you talk about, so was Django your first web framework that you dove into?
Yeah, it was. If we really want to be specific, I started coding with MySpace, but I came back around, and after they said, Jake, we got to stop using, I started learning jQuery when it came out, and then we had to stop using it. By the time I mean, it's everywhere still, but yes, that's where my circle was.
You just about get the hang of it, and then everyone's like, no.
Well, that's JavaScript for you, right? So,
right, exactly.
Well, I was gonna ask, because so Django is my first web framework, and it was only when I was on my third or fourth different framework that I started to have a big picture sense of how frameworks work.
Yes.
And so a lot of my personal difficulty with Django was just learning how web stuff works. And so I assigned it to Django initially, and now I sort of realize, you know, Django can only do so much, but you sort of need to come at it from a bunch of different angles before you can just have a big picture view of what you need for a website and then what a web framework can do. So I wonder if that was a similar journey for you.
It was interesting. I didn't really even understand what, like, the server was or, like, how it... I mean, the Django girls will go through it, and they've also expanded some of their documentation, but I didn't understand... what like Gunicorn or Nginx would do, and like how that all kind of worked, and what is Redis and how. And so I did feel like I was learning almost backwards, like what does this package do in Django versus like here is this area of web development or you know, web engineering, and like now fill in backwards with tools that may cover some of those areas for you. Yeah, totally. I agree with that.
Well, I think the way you learned is the way most people learn. I mean, because part of it, I think about this as an educator is, you know, any one of us could tell someone, okay, here's how a web service works and list, you know, Gunicorn and all sorts of phrases. But I feel like unless someone has struggled and gotten stuck, that's all just going to go in one ear and out the other. Mm-hmm. So I always try to wonder, you know, show and tell. How do you balance, you know, at the one hand, you want people to actually be able to build something, but if you hit them with everything, it's just going to overwhelm them. I mean, even Nginx, like Carlton's pretty pro at that. I have a very, very basic knowledge of Nginx because usually I'm using a platform as a service. And I've done it a couple times. It was fun, but I just... You know, I could figure it out, I guess, but I certainly don't do it all the time.
In a way, it's kind of backwards. It's like we're solving the web problem. Well, Nginx is the web server, or Apache, you know, is the web server. And then Django's a kind of plugin for that, but we don't learn it that way. We land Django, and then we're like, and I need to, you know, so we try and do all these things in Django, which maybe the web server's better at. But we don't, you know, how do you learn this other than time on the coalface, you know?
This
getting
is true.
Familiarity.
Yes, it's true.
What was that phrase? Time on the coalface?
Yeah, like so you're at the face in the mine where you dig the coal and you get the coal.
It's
out
a mining
it's a mining reference.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe we can dive into I'll just pick one of the things we want to talk about. So React. So you have some talks and you've done a bunch with Django and React. Can you talk about maybe talk about React. Where is React at these days? Because as a non-JavaScript person, you know, there's Vue, there's Angular. What is your sense of you know, React, they're still dealing with hooks.
Yes.
Like, what's the state of React these days?
Yes. So I would not be the definitive source. I would direct you to
the many
podcasts that are already going, that are continuing all the time. I learned a lot from those. And I try to stay more solidified in the Django community. And I like to be a JavaScript person for Python people. One of my friends, Jean Underlay, is releasing a series called JavaScript for Python Developers. I think it's in the beta phase right now, but he is accepting emails and newsletters, and he's really, really bright. And one of the people who really brought me into Django in a very formal mentorship way as well. But back to React and the things that I do. I enjoy it. It does seem like the community and what is the best practice in the newest waves change very, very frequently. But I do think that hooks are really fun, and it's more declarative and easier to understand what's happening. And when I switch back and forth between them, because I'll do it within the day, I may do it within the day. It's whether or not I'm thinking in the mind space of Django models or truly in a stateful component. And when I think about like how there are people going through a user journey that are going to experience several states in a row, and is this going to go step one, step two, step three? Maybe not even that cleanly, but if I can put my mind in like a linear path or like a journey, then I can get my brain into the mode of working in React, when it's just very different when you're doing Django. It's very focused on the models and the information you're serving or the information you're capturing. What are you going to do with that? And then transpose it and move it somewhere else. It's a little bit of a mind doing.
Well, that's you, Carlton, right? You're doing that with Swift these days for your project.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same problem, right? So if you've got a backend which is Django powered and you're consuming it with a rich JavaScript client like React, well, it's React-based or, you know, a native app, be it Swift or something else, then the app has state where the web where the Django app kind of doesn't, right? It's a series of totally disconnected requests to the Django app, but then you've got to string them together exactly as you say in this user journey or something. What I wanted to ask you about, Dawn, was like every month, it seems, that comes up on Django developers, can we have a better story for front-end integration in Django?
And
every month we struggle with, what would that integration look like? Because we've got contrib static files and collect static, and that gets it all in the right place. But you're working there every day. How do you deal with the integration with Django and React?
Yeah, so I wrestle with it myself. So most of the projects, so I am working with it every day, but I don't know if I'm setting up projects myself every day. So I can also speak a little bit more to my consulting journey as well. So I really enjoy being in the team augmentation role. I do work on some proof of concept sometimes, solo. I have deployed solid Django and, you know, normal fluff JavaScript, HTML, CSS on the front end myself. And I do that with Rugby Street Consulting. But I also spend a lot of time with Two Rock Software, a consulting agency in the Chapel Hill area. Really awesome humans. And I met them through a very similar story of being community taught. And I met them through the Django sphere. I don't know if I would really I could suggest or explain a solution that really works best for me. I'm looking to continue to refine and then create a boilerplate code for myself. And I find some out in the sphere, but it feels so proprietary these days, in that it's not, everyone has a little bit different flavor, and no one knows if they're doing it right, and everyone's too scared to say if they're doing what they're doing exactly.
That's exactly it.
I was going to say, I think also as a consultant, you often join projects midway, so you don't have the luxury or the burden of setting it up from scratch. And most people don't, actually. I know Carlton and I often talk about a greenfield project, but that's not the reality for most programmers. But yes, Gatsby, I know your personal site is written in that, and you have a talk on it, or two talks on it.
Yeah. So full circle, though, Gatsby is, so it's like a static site generator plus. So you're writing it in React. It distills down and then rehydrates into a progressive web app. It still has a lot of the progressive feelings and stateful components and whatnot when you're doing it right. Now, I'm not quite an expert in Gatsby, but I do see a similarity in the Wagtail community and in the Gatsby community. It is very, very developer focused. It's focused on the developer experience and does the kind of the plugin architecture, very accessibility forward. Wagtail frequently has accessibility sprints, and there's a Wagtail accessibility package out there available if people are interested in accessibility in their frameworks, and so that is one of the ways in experimenting with that stack has been really interesting. It comes with GraphQL. And so then you're using Django REST framework with GraphQL on top, and it does feel like there's two engines in a car. It is cool how GraphQL will just kind of catch things for you. You describe what you want, and then it'll say, here it is, sort of. And I say sort of so often because that's, you know, syntactical sugar.
Well, we say it depends. It depends.
Yeah.
So we should cut into Wagtail there, because you're in the core team now for Wagtail, right?
Yeah, part
of the Wagtail community. So how did you tell us how you got involved and how that came to be?
Okay, right. So 2018. Well, Tom is truly just one of the nicest people on the planet. Anywhere he goes, I think he makes friends. So Tom Dyson in 2017 was giving a talk at DjangoCon, a tutorial, I think, and I did that. I interacted with him through several events, and then gave a talk at a Django Space in Philadelphia. It was my first talk ever. That was exciting, and it was very cute. I described the landscape or the types of people who involve themselves in the open source community by archetypes of land before time. And so there was like Ducky and all of them. And I might even dust that one off and make it a little bit more sophisticated with some actual numbers back there. I have a little bit more maintainer, I do air quotes, this is a podcast, maintainer experience. But being on the core team really does make me feel close to the action. It's really exciting. We meet, they meet every week, but US time is every other week, and I catch those. And we do have like several suggested responsibilities, but it's really just a bunch of people who spend as much time as they can working on and contributing to Wagtail. And it's really invigorating, really nice.
Fantastic. And so for the listeners, what's new in Wagtail at the moment? What's the state of play with Wagtail? What are the exciting new things?
Yeah, we just hit 10,000 stars, which is huge. We had a couple tweets about it. So in my notes here, it says, yes. Okay, so we are in the top 1,900 repositories of 15 million on GitHub. It's just really exciting. We just released the 2.12 release candidate, and that's still pending. I don't know when 2.12 is like stable is getting dropped, but it does support Python 3.9, and there's other lists of things that are associated with that list, with that release. The documentation sprint is coming up, and so that's February 4th and 5th. I want to make sure people join that if they're interested.
Okay, how would I find out about that if I wanted to go on the documentation sprint?
It's on the Wagtail blog, wagtail.o /blog, and one of the most recent posts is the documentation sprint 2021, and there's a sign-up form and everything.
Now, there's also packages. There's a dedicated packages section to Wagtail, right? That's a pretty recent thing.
Yes. Yeah. So there's Wagtail's packages, and then also they are now both in Django packages as well. I love the Django packages interface and the way that it's comparative and has all the lists. I mean, it's really, really great. So all of the Wagtail packages are also in Django packages, and you can also do wagtail.o /packages.
I think it's a big thing that of how Wagtail's come on. It's got its own packages ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like it's... two layers of turtles or something.
You know, it's like, oh yeah, what's Wagtail? Oh, it's this Django CMS. No, it's this whole thing on its own. It's like, you know, okay, it's built with Django, but it's got its own life. It's got its own ecosystem.
Yeah, it's really exciting. So we have like several partners. I mean, we work with Motley Fool, I know a lot. Gosh, I'm going to do a disservice to the people that we work with. But they're big organizations that are propelling some of these Wagtail features. And it's been really exciting to be witness to it. I haven't done nearly as much code contribution as I'd like to with Wagtail, but that's definitely in my 2021 goals.
Yeah. Well, community counts too. I mean,
it does. Thank you.
Yeah. This week in Wagtail. Yes. That's the newsletter, right? I think. Yeah. And I see you have got Django News on there too, that Jeff and I run, which also sometimes has stuff.
Yes. Oh, wait. I see Jeff posting about it all the time. And I keep forgetting that this is, yes, of course you do that as well.
I'm everywhere. Yeah. Yeah. Everywhere
you
in
really
community.
Are. But yeah, if you use the hashtag This Week in Wagtail, it works for on Twitter and other channels. And there's also a channel in the Slack, in the Wagtail Slack, for This Week in Wagtail.
What I wanted to ask then, so you're busy consulting, trying, you know, freelancing, whatever, you know, doing your work. And then you're also contributing to open source. And it's not like you've got bucket loads of free time and a cushy bankroll to sit on while you're doing all that. So how do you find time for contributing to open source? Because this is the big thing. Like, how is it? Like, open source can really help boost your profile. But how do you possibly justify that time if you're working and you've got other commitments? And how do you find that time? How do you find the time to contribute to open source?
Things I think about all the time, like top of the list. I'm a huge note taker, and a lot of times I write out all of my goals, and as they converge on things that have some certain similarities, I'll try to like kind of group them together. Another side project that's more about open source and ethical source licenses and contributing good code to a altruistic future. And I am building that in Gatsby and Wagtail, because these are the tools of other parts of my life, and then also hope to add features that I know that may need a little love in the Wagtail community as well. And I really just try to like converge some of these ideas. For example, there's a potential client that might want an e-commerce solution. I've been looking at the e-commerce packages that are available with Wagtail. And some of them need love. Some of them have a lot of work put into them. I'm completely new to this, to the e-commerce Wagtail landscape. So let's check it out and see what I can contribute. Where does it need some help? And if you're searching at the top of the funnel, as you're like planning some of your stack and your things, sometimes you can kill two birds with one stone, for example.
Yeah, right. Okay. Try and work it into the work.
That's the plan, hopefully. I mean, I think there's a lot of people doing really great things out there that are already in sync with things that they can contribute.
Yeah, okay.
On consulting, we have in the notes, can you talk about making the leap to consulting? Because I believe you started doing that while you were working full time.
Yeah.
Like, what was that transition like? Because that's, you know, one that I think a lot of people go through, but it's a hard one.
I would not recommend my transition. It was incredibly gutsy. I had been consulting for about a year at the same time as working full time as a project manager at Lenovo. And so I'm probably doing 60, 70 hours a week, maybe 40, 50 with my full time. And it was just exhausting. And so I just really wanted to get into code and code every day and most of the day. And so at the end of Lenovo, I was moved over to their UX team, and I was working in React. But I, you know, missed Django and just didn't feel like I was learning fast enough. I was just getting anxious. And so I just left. And it was, I mean, I really enjoyed Lenovo, but I was just like, okay, I guess I'm just gonna, I think I'm just gonna leave. I'm gonna take my savings and just go and try. And then I'm gonna do it in Europe. I'm gonna do it in Europe with my dog. And I did it, and it was really, it was a cool year.
Yeah, I saw, you had a blog post on this, I saw.
Yeah.
So why, yeah. Was it Amsterdam? Where were you? I forget, were you in the same place mainly, or did you bounce around?
I did two places mainly. I did 4 months in Amsterdam and 3 months in The Hague and 3 months in London. And so it wasn't quite a full year. I came back, and I would love to write another post about like why I came back. It wasn't quite a couldn't hack it, but it was being 2,000 miles away from all of the people that I care about, and then not having anything that tied me to a particular place like a job, not being able to really develop a routine quite yet, and then not really knowing where I was going to settle roots. So it was either Philadelphia or Berlin next after London, because Brexit was about to happen. I couldn't stay. And we didn't know what vacation, and it was only there like just kind of popping around, so it was definitely within my like U.S. visa to be able to stay for 6 months, and I only stayed for three. But we didn't know what Brexit was going to do. So then, but I chose Philadelphia because I really missed a sense of community and miss Europe still all the time. So there's definitely a chance that I would go back for the right set of circumstances. But it would be, I'd like something a little bit more grounding that would just keep me a little more sane.
Yeah, that sounds right. Speaking of community and east of here, so DjangoCon Africa, you were an organizer. The inaugural one was going to be last year.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about that conference and organizing it and all of that?
Yeah.
Because right now there's currently the US, Europe, and Australia. So yep. This is going to be the fourth major DjangoCon.
Yep. So I've helped small ways organize for the US one. I've helped organize in a more substantial way in 2019 for DjangoCon Europe in Copenhagen. I'm really just taking listening to what they need and for just help and taking directions. I'm not much of a leadership position in this one, but I'm going to be in the sponsorship team for DjangoCon Africa, and it is happening. And I got confirmation of that the other day, but we're going to start moving a little faster in the beginning of this year. That's exciting. That's going to be in Ethiopia. Just really excited to, I've never been to the continent of Africa before, so that'll be really nice.
Super. And when is it? Sorry. I mean, you say it is going ahead even with the pandemic.
Yeah, it was supposed to be November of last year, and I believe it should still be in that same time frame. It'll definitely
okay,
be
so
after
towards the end of the year.
US. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Can I cut back to, you said you're building a project. You didn't talk about the project, but you said you were building it on Wagtail and Gatsby. So is that, are you using the sort of Wagtail in the headless mode that I've
Yes,
heard?
Headless. Let's get
yes.
that.
Yes.
What on earth is going on there? Tell us about that. Because like I've heard this thrown around. I may have even seen like a workshop going on in a room that I wasn't in. But like
yeah.
what is a headless CMS, and then what does Wagtail bring to the party?
Right. So Wagtail in particular, I love that leans into the CMS likeness for those where it relies a lot on page hierarchy and patterns that are common with having another user come in, create their own pages very heavily. It leans into that. Django does it very well. Wagtail just wants to be more opinionated about it and helpful. And so headless Wagtail really allows for other integration quickly. And Caleb Tullian with learnwagtail.com has so many resources on it. It's really, really helpful. And so then I am experimenting with having Gatsby on top. It's currently not in production. So what I have up now at theroot.com, at theroot.dev, is just Gatsby right now, and I'm using Netlify CMS, but that's being changed out very quickly because I'm not happy with that solution. But it does deploy very quickly, and to just get something out fast is great.
Why Gatsby versus React? What does Gatsby give you that React doesn't, right? Or how do you think about combine? Because you could combine either with headless Wagtail.
Yeah, so I have, the way that I've justified the investment in this, I mean, I do also like new shiny things. So then I try to justify my addiction to shiny new things. So I have about two.
That's why you're friends with Jeff.
Right, yeah. I have two speeds in my, and what's really stable is when I'm team augmenting, and I spend mostly, at this point, it's probably 70% of my time with that, but usually it's like 50-50. And then the other 50%, I'm doing kind of smaller projects, or I'm able to, I also have so many ideas. So I can buy a domain and just like push it out really quickly. And I love that experience, but also being a developer, I want to be able to upgrade as much as possible. I don't want to be at the behest of somewhere else, like a Squarespace or things like that. So I enjoy the fact that Gatsby has starters, and it can get my brain moving on what's possible. It gives me somewhere to truly start with. Wagtail starts up very, very quickly, but like is a developer's tool, and is not made to be a codeless solution. And then hooking those together, leaning into those developer experiences and trying to make something scalable, but deploy very quickly is my goal. And I feel like we're getting really close there. There's a Wagtail Netlify solution package that just was released recently. I'm hoping to include that and kind of just figure out what this rapid prototyping or this rapid development kind of thing could look like. It's more of a experiment, and we'll see how it goes.
Okay.
So you mentioned starters. I had to Google that, but it looks like there's like 500 sort of pre-built templates just for Gatsby with Common, which is, you know, it'd be great if there was that for Django. I mean, there sort of is, but it's not as unified, I guess.
Yeah. Yep. It's really, really cool. And it curates a gallery of a lot of different plugins and things that are already in existence with Gatsby. So that makes it fun.
I know, Carlton, I know you have a question. I want to ask one. So if you have a, how do you deploy a Wagtail Gatsby site? Do you have Gatsby on Netlify and Wagtail on Heroku, or what do you use for the API part?
Currently, I'm using DigitalOcean. And with my deploy, I couldn't get the Wagtail Netlify to work exactly yet, but that's a future plan that I mean, there's a Netlify Wagtail, or excuse me, there's a Netlify Gatsby, and there's Netlify Wagtail. And so one of my future plans is to have a starter and a deploy and a boilerplate code to be able to explore doing that regularly. And there's a little bit on it, but not much out there.
Yeah, I see Tom Dyson has this Wagtail Netlify package.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'll have to look at that. Where's the database, right? Because Netlify, do they do host databases now?
I think what they would do is they serve it as a static site.
Yeah, but I mean, isn't there a thing as well? There's a Wagtail bakery or something where you can, perhaps that's not the right term, but perhaps that's not the right name of the package, but you can get a static site out of your Wagtail site.
Yes,
so
you
use the CMS for generating it, and then you run this command and it gives you a static site, which I guess you can then put on Netlify. I'm just
At this point, it is currently magic to me. But yes, I am. Yeah.
Well, this is a little bit like, I'll date myself, back in the day with Flask, there was a way to, was it Flask Freeze, where you could essentially, I think, have something very similar. You'd have a server and have dynamic templates, and then you could run a command and it would output a static site that you could then in its entirety put online, which seems like that's what these ones do with Wagtail, which makes a lot of sense. You know what I'm talking about, Carlton, right?
I used to do it with WebGet, with WGET, and you know, WGET million command line flags, and you'd mirror it, and then there's your static site. And it's
Feel like there's a lot of static site, Python static site ones. There's even, I think I finally got myself off of being a core member of Armin who did Flask has his own static site generator. But I guess I haven't fully dived into Python-based ones recently. I'm still using Jekyll, and with the Big Sur update, I had to do a whole bunch of stuff, and I'm always like, ah, Jekyll, but, you know, it's just for my personal site. So
I like it. Yeah, it was very easy, but I think DjangoCon US uses Jekyll, or was it Hugo? But it was not really easy.
Yeah. I've used both. The problem is Ruby, not Jekyll, but...
Ah, yeah, okay.
Anyway. I'm willing to say it, Carlton. I'm willing to say it. People can comment on that. And it's not Ruby the language. It's just getting Ruby installed is just a pain for me.
It's getting the right gems installed.
So you recently wrote a blog post about from Martin Luther King Day about decolonizing tech. Can you talk a little bit about that post and what that involves?
Yeah. So I may have mentioned previously, one of the side projects that I have is At The Root. It's really taking up more of my time lately because I'm so passionate about it. And it just feels like a very viable way to address open source tools, capital O, capital S, that are that continue a system of inequality and racism in tech. So there's an absolutely amazing talk from PyCon AU this year. It's about biometrics in technology, and it goes through so many scenarios of how because we are creating this,
yeah, by Karina,
we live in a system that is inherent. Mm-hmm, by Karina, yes. We live in this system that is inherently racist and that has inherent disadvantages to people and doesn't analyze the ramifications of our tools, of our frameworks, of our algorithms on people, that we are continuing to propagate the system and propel this system. And so having ethical source, many people may have heard of the first or Do No Harm, which is the Hippocratic license that Coraline created. And in the same vein, there are other ones for the environment. And we have an actively anti-racist one at theroot.dev. And we're still in the stages of our first release. We're talking with IP lawyers and intellectuals in our community who are at the intersection of ethics and open source, capital O, capital S, in order to see what ethical source licenses can do. And really what that legal tension means currently, an ethical source license would make it your open source lowercase o, lowercase s. But we're discussing those nuances, what they do for the community, and how to propel us forward. And so then the context of the blog post, decolonizing technology, I really wanted to just think of the convergence of all of the Bing words and all of the big things that we're talking about right now. The U.S. has had a really tumultuous year, and it's raised a lot of tensions on race across the world, and the ramifications of which. And how can we be actionable in fixing that? And so I talk about what it means, how this ideology in the system is perpetuated, come up with actual examples, in there, and then propose the two products that At The Root is doing as a solution. The first of which is the ethical source license, and the second of which I haven't mentioned is the to-do list. And so, as we gain more support, I'm hoping to get subject matter experts to provide suggestions on, depending on what your project entails, on how to be actively anti-racist. Things that would help all sorts of communities, like if you are doing a social platform, there should always be a block feature. And that protects people in underrepresented communities. Or if you're doing, you know, training algorithms, what is your data input? Are you getting it from places where people have consented? What are you saying about the data sources are what is essentially people. The rows are people that you may be training data on. And what does that mean?
That's great. That makes a lot of sense. That, you know, sort of the dark humor of the United States. One of the things I enjoyed was people noting that in terms of identifying the rioters, most of them were white, and most of the AI algorithms for facial stuff are key to that. So one unintended benefit, I suppose.
Right. And even in the wake of Parler and everything like that, and just what does that mean? And Jack Dorsey finally kind of came to terms and spoke about things in a long Twitter thread that you can believe or not believe, but regardless, there is a groundswell of thought and consideration on what the role technology has in morality or keeping people safe at the very least.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. We'll have that in the show links for sure.
I mean, just on that topic, there's one thing that's constantly on my mind, and perhaps you can comment as a contributor to the Django community, a contributor to software in the contributor to the community, a contributor to the code as well in the Django community, and a person of color, is like how do we widen the contributor pool to Django itself? Because we have the code of conduct, we have an open and welcoming community. It's you know, radically different from other communities in other in tech, and yet, if you look at the contributor base, you know, to Django Core, like the people making commits, they're still all white and they're still all men.
Yeah.
Not all, but, you know, mostly. And so it ties back to what we were talking about before when I was like, well, how do you find time to contribute? Because that's one thing, right? It's, you know, economic privilege is a big step up.
Exactly.
But like what, so if I just lay that topic there, what sort of thoughts might you have? How do we make it easier?
You've definitely hit on one of the first things that I was going to say, which is kind of in many ways outside of Django's hands, but then maybe not. I think there could be some creative ways to address it. Is economic privilege, having the time and the bandwidth to do so. As a consultant, it's really not easy to contribute as a consultant because I really have to justify my hours, my daily rate. Yeah. While in a salary position, not so much. You are able to, there's more of a global perspective in order to give back. And I really enjoy the companies that are participating in the Django community and then give back and then also have some of their employees give back to the community as well and are continually active. And I think the more diverse companies like that are, the more opportunities there are to get closer to the code. We're also developing a lot of resources for first-time contributors, and hopefully with several different approaches like representation and seeing more people like them, and just even understanding how the open source community works. I will never begrudge a person of color engineer saying, no, I'm going for the money. I want to make six figures. I want a fat salary and a Maserati. Personally, that's not for me. And I really have gotten a lot. It's not for me yet. I don't know. But I've gotten a lot of the things that I've
got
in my career. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. We can dip in and out. I don't know. But I definitely scratched the altruistic itch right now, and that's really important to me. And I think that other people recognizing that you can give back, you can feel like a good person, you can be intellectually curious and motivated and work with brilliant people who treat you like a human, and it's possible. And it'll take time, but it'll take diligence, and it'll take repeated effort. It will never be one shot. It'll be continually doing the right thing. And I think the tides will be in our favor. I have to be optimistic.
Well, I mean, Carlton's given a bunch of talks on this. I would just add, one thing we've tried to talk about in this podcast is it's not just altruistic. It's also very self-interested to contribute, because if you, for example, you're a consultant, it does come out of your billable times. But if you're a consultant who's contributed to Django or who works in, you know, you're a core Wagtail person, that certainly helps get client work. So you know, when people ask me, because of my books, they're starting out in Django, how do I get hired? Which is a really hard question to answer.
Yeah.
I often say we should have some projects on GitHub if you can. you should, you know, if you can do any sort of blog or writing about your journey, and then if you can contribute anything, whether it's the docs, at a conference, you know, code is great, just to be part of the community, that proves that you know how to work with others, that you're in the community. And someone who's applying who has already contributed to Django in some way, code or otherwise, mm-hmm. that goes to the top of the list. So that's sort of a interviewing expense in a way. So it's not, I guess it's altruism isn't the only reason, though, of course, it yes. feels good and it's nice to work with smart people, not doing it for the money, but you can get a lot of side benefits while doing the right, while doing altruistic stuff.
Definitely. I just tweeted about it this morning, looking up a package that I need to solve a problem for a potential client. I'm seeing the comparison, looking at the contributors, seeing if I know anyone, seeing one of my friends up there, and then slacking my friend directly. And when I first yeah. started, the world just seemed so vast. I sent an email, thank you for having your blog in existence. And I was so surprised I even got an email back. So it was just very big, and being part of the community makes it smaller and truly helps me solve problems a lot faster.
Well, it seems like you've always been good about reaching out, because I would say, I have a blog and sites and I get a decent number of emails, but it's a tiny, tiny, tiny number given the number of people who look at stuff. So on the one hand, I'm not surprised that someone responds, because you don't actually get many emails, certainly not one saying, hey, thanks. I think most people don't take that first step. They don't think about the fact that, you know, there's a person there, and beyond, obviously, it's nice to just say good things about someone. You know, then they sort of get to know you, you know, or maybe you have a question about something they can help. You know, it's a way to build relationships. Most of my Django relationships are purely online. Mm-hmm. You know, similar to, I think, how it seems like it is for you. Though, of course, you've been to way more Django cons than we have. I mean, I met Carlton at my first Django con, and, you know, that worked out. So going to events, if you can, is a great thing.
Truly, I attribute my career to the quote-unquote networking I've done in Django, but it always feels so disingenuous when I say networking, because it's, I just make really smart friends, and thank goodness we're in the same career. I meet them at career events, so, and it's how I navigated Europe. It's how I got gigs when I first was starting out. I mean, you really wouldn't think that someone just kind of jumps into it and you know, knock on wood, things have gone really, really well in the 2 and some change years I've consulted, because of I'm also pretty earnest and people are kind of put aback by it. So I'm like, oh, you're a good person. I'm a good person. Let's be friends, code together. And I'm like, sure. And it works out.
Yeah, no, it does. It does.
Is there anything else we haven't mentioned that you want to plug or say on the way out? We're close to time now.
I've talked about so much. And I think I also was a little repetitive. So I'm great. This was really a great experience. I'm appreciative to be on the platform. And yeah. So yeah, you guys are doing great things in the community. It's really great that this exists.
Thank you. Well, we have links to everything we discussed in the show. And Carlton, can you read us out? You read us in. Where can people find out more about the show?
DjangoChat.com is our website. And then we've got a Chat Django Twitter handle as well. And I think that's it, really.
Yeah, so, that's it.
Well, Dawn, thank you for coming on. Join us next time, folks.
Thank you, Don.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.